On the third day, the messenger of the Amlimo came down from the cavern to where the Indunas waited in the village. The messenger was a pretty girl child with a solemn expression and old wise eyes. She was on the very edge of puberty, with the hard little stones already forming in her mulberry dark nipples, and the first light fuzz shading the deep cleft in the angle of her thighs. Around her neck, she wore a talisman that only Tanasi recognized. It was a sign that one day this child, in her turn, would take on the sacred mantle of the Amlimo and preside in the gruesome cavern in the cliff above the village. Instinctively, the child looked to Tanasi, where she squatted to one side of the ranks of men, and with her eyes and a secret hand sign of the initiates, Tanasi indicated Somabula, the senior Induna. The child's indecision was merely a symptom of the swift degeneration of Matabele society. In the time of the kings, no one, child nor adult, would have been in any doubt as to the order of precedence. When Somabula rose to follow the messenger, his half-brothers rose with him, Babian on one hand and Gandang on the other. "You also, Batso," Somabula said. And though Batso was younger and more junior than some of them, none of the other Indunas protested at his inclusion in the mission. The child witch took Tanasi's hand, for they were sisters of the dark spirits, and the two of them led the way up the steep path. The mouth of the cavern was 100 paces wide, but the roof was barely high enough to clear a man's head. Once, long ago, the opening had been fortified with blocks of dressed stone, worked in the same fashion as the walls of Great Zimbabwe. But these had been tumbled into rough piles, leaving gaps like those in an old man's teeth. The little party halted involuntarily. The four Indunas hung back and drew closer together, as though to take comfort from each other. Men who had wielded the assegai in 100 bloody battles and run in onto the guns of the white men's laager were fearful now as they faced the dark entrance. In the silence, a voice spoke suddenly from above them, emanating from the bare cliff face of smooth, lichen-streaked granite. "Let the Indunas of Royal Kumalo enter the sacred place!" They were the quavering, discordant tones of an ancient beldam. And the four warriors looked up fearfully. But there was no living thing to be seen, and none of them could summon the courage to reply. Tanasi had felt the child's hand quiver slightly in her grip at the ventriloquist effort of projection. And only Tanasi was so attuned to the ways of the witches that she knew how the art of the voices was taught to the apprentices of the Amlimo. The child was already highly skilled, and Tanasi shuddered involuntarily as she realized what other fearful skills she must have mastered, what other gruesome ordeals and terrible agonies she must already have endured. In a moment of empathy, she squeezed the child's narrow, cool hand, and together they stepped through the ruined portals. Behind them, the four noble warriors crowded with the temerity of children, peering around them anxiously and stumbling on the uneven footing. The throat of the cavern narrowed, and Tanasi thought with a flash of grim humour that it was as well that the light was too bad for the Indunas to make out clearly the walls on either hand, for even their warlike courage might have been unequal to the horror of the catacombs. In a bygone age that the verbal history of the Rozwi and the Karanga tribes could no longer recount, generations before bold Mzilikazi led his tribe into these hills, another plundering marauder had passed this way. It might have been Manatasi, the legendary conquering queen, at the head of her merciless hordes, laying waste to the land and slaughtering everything in her path, sparing neither women nor child, nor even the domestic animals. The threatened tribes had taken refuge in this valley, but the marauder had burst through the narrow pass, and the miserable host had fled into their final sanctuary in this cavern. The roof overhead was still coated with soot, for the marauder had not deemed it worthwhile to lay siege to the cavern. They had pulled down the protecting wall and blocked the entrance with piles of green brush and wood. Then they had put in fire. The entire tribe had perished, and smoke had mummified their remains. So they had lain down the years in banks and heaps, piled as high as the low roof. As Tanasi's party went forward, from somewhere ahead of them, a faint bluish light grew in intensity, until Butso exclaimed suddenly and pointed to the wall of human debris beside him. In places the parchment-like flesh had peeled away so that the ivory skulls grinned at them, and the contorted skeletal arms seemed to wave a macabre salutation as they passed. The Indunas were bathed in sweat, despite the cool gloom, and their expressions were awed and sickly. Tanasi and the child followed the twisting pathway with unerring familiarity, and came out at last above a deep natural amphitheatre. A single ray of sunlight burned down from a narrow crack in the domed cavern roof. On the floor of the amphitheatre was an open fireplace, and a tendril of pale blue smoke twisted slowly upwards towards the opening high above. Tanasi and the child led them down the rock steps to the smooth sandy floor of the amphitheatre, and at her gesture the four Indunas sank down gratefully and squatted, facing the smouldering fire. Tanasi released the child's hand and sat a little to one side and behind the men. The child crossed to the far wall and took a handful of herbs from one of the big round clay pots that stood there. She threw the handful upon the fire, and immediately a great yellow cloud of acrid smoke billowed upwards. And as it slowly cleared, the Indunas started and exclaimed with superstitious dread. A grotesque figure faced them from across the flames. It was an albino, with silver-white leprous skin. It was a woman, for the great pale breasts were massively pendulous, the nipples a painful boiled pink colour. She was stark naked, and her dense pubic bush was white as frost-struck winter grass, and above it her belly hung in loose balconies of fat. Her forehead was low and sloped backwards, her mouth was wide and thin so that she appeared toad-like. Across her broad and flattened nose and her pale cheeks, the unpigmented skin had erupted in a tender raw rash. Her thickened forearms were folded across her belly and her thighs, splotched with large ginger-coloured freckles, were widespread as she knelt on a mat of zebra skin and regarded the men before her fixedly. "I see you, O Chosen One," Somabula greeted her. Despite an enormous effort of will, his voice trembled. The Amlimo made no response, and Somabula rocked back on his heels and was silent. The girl child was busy amongst the pots, and now she came forward and knelt beside the gross albino, proffering the clay pipe she had prepared. The Amlimo took the long reed stem between her thin silvery lips, and the girl lifted a live coal from the fire with her bare hands and placed it on the vegetable ball in the bowl of the pipe. It began to glow and splutter, and the Amlimo drew a slow lungful and then let the aromatic smoke trickle out of her simian nostrils. Immediately the heavy, sweetish odour of insangu carried to the waiting men. The oracle was induced in different ways. Before Tanasi had lost the power, it had descended spontaneously upon her, throwing her into convulsive fits while the spirit voices struggled to escape from her throat. However, this grotesque successor had to resort to the wild hemp pipe. The seeds and flowers of the cannabis sativa plant, crushed in the green and moulded in sun-dried balls, were her key to the spirit world. She smoked quietly, a dozen short inhalations without allowing the smoke to escape, holding it until her pale face seemed to swell and the pink pupils of her eyes glazed over. Then she expelled the smoke with an explosive exhalation and started again. The Indunas watched her with such fascination that they did not at first notice the soft scratching sound on the cavern floor. It was Butso who at last started and grunted with shock, and involuntarily grasped his father's forearm. Gandang exclaimed and began to rise in horror and alarm, but Tanasi's voice arrested him. "Do not move! It is dangerous!" She whispered this urgently, and Gandang sank back and froze into stillness. From the dark recesses in the back of the cavern, a lobster-like creature scuttled across the pale sandy floor towards where the Amlimo squatted. The firelight glinted on the glossy, armoured carapace of the creature as it reached the Amlimo, and then began to climb up her bloated silver-white body. It paused in her lap, with the long segmented tail lifting and pulsing, its spider-like legs hooked into the Amlimo's coarse white pubic curls, before it began climbing again, up over her bulging belly, hanging from one drooping pale breast like some evil fruit on the bough. Upwards it climbed, onto her shoulder, and then it reached the angle of her jaw below the ear. The Amlimo remained unperturbed, sipping little puffs of the narcotic smoke from the mouthpiece of her pipe, her pink eyes staring blindly at the Indunas. The huge, glittering insect crawled up her temple, and then sideways, until it stopped in the centre of her crusted and scabbed forehead, where it hung upside down, and the long scorpion tail, longer than a man's forefinger, arched up over its horny back. The Amlimo began to mutter and mumble, and a rime of white froth bubbled onto her raw lips. She said something in a strange language, and the scorpion on her forehead pulsed its long segmented tail, and from the point of the red fang at the tip, a clear drop of venom welled and sparkled like a jewel in the dim light. The Amlimo spoke again in a hoarse, strained voice and an unintelligible language. "What does she say?" Batso whispered, turning his head towards Tanasi. "What language does she use?" "She speaks in the secret tongue of the initiates," Tanasi murmured. "She is inviting the spirits to enter and take control of her body." The albino reached up slowly and took the scorpion off her forehead. She held the head and body within her closed fist, only the long tail whipping furiously from side to side, and she brought it down slowly and held it to her own breast. The scorpion struck, and the rigid thorn fang buried itself deeply in her obscene pink flesh. The Amlimo's face did not alter, and the scorpion struck again and again, leaving little red punctures in the soft breast. "She will die!" gasped Batso. "Let her be," hissed Tanasi. "She is not like other women. The poison will not harm her. It serves only to open her soul to the spirits." The albino lifted the scorpion from her bosom and dropped it into the flames of the fire, where it writhed and withered into a little charred speck. And suddenly the Amlimo uttered an unearthly shriek. "The spirits enter," Tanasi whispered. The Amlimo's mouth gaped open, and little glassy strings of saliva drooled from her chin, while three or four wild voices seemed to issue from her throat simultaneously, each trying to drown out the others, voices of men and women and animals, until at last one rose above them and silenced the others. It was a man's voice, and it spoke in the mystical tongue. Even its modulation and cadence were totally alien, but Tanasi quietly translated for them. "When the noon sun goes dark with wings, and the trees are bare of leaves in the springtime, then, warriors of Matabili, put an edge to your steel." The four Indunas nodded. They had heard this prophecy before, for the Amlimo was often repetitious, and always she was obscure. They had puzzled over the same words before. It was this message that Batso and Tanasi had carried to the scattered peoples of the Matabili during their wandering from kraal to kraal. The gross albino seer grunted and threshed her arms, as though struggling with an invisible adversary. The pale pink eyes jerked in her skull, out of kilter with each other, so that she squinted and leered, and she ground her teeth together with a sound like a hound worrying a bone. The girl-child rose quietly from where she squatted amongst the pots, and she leaned over the Amlimo and dashed a pinch of pungent red powder into her face. The Amlimo's paroxysm eased. The clenched jaw fell open, and another voice spoke, a guttural, blurred sound, barely human, using the same weird dialect, and Tanasi strained forward to catch each syllable, and then repeated calmly, "When the cattle lie with their heads twisted to touch their flank, and cannot rise, then warriors of Matabili take heart, for their time will be nigh."